Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the March 3rd broadcast of Italian Tomatoes. We're just doing a debate show tonight, going to cover the last hour of the debate, and then if anyone calls in, we'll have a discussion on the events of the day, which was quite a day with the news, all the different presidential campaigns slinging arrows at each other, and of course the intervention of Mitt Romney basically trying to forge an anti-Trump coalition in all states. Romney is urging Republican voters in all the remaining primary states to basically vote for anybody but Trump, to select the person who has the best chance of winning a particular state and vote for him in the hopes of stopping Trump and probably triggering a brokered convention and creating quite a free-for-all when the Republican convention meets in Cleveland in the summer. So that's where we are. The audio feed that I have is from the Fox radio station. We get Fox News Talk Radio. They are doing a live stream. I don't have video available at home, so I really don't know what's going on at the stage because I don't have cable. I'm one of those people that cut the cord, as it were, some time ago on cable. So I don't know what's going to go on tonight. I only scheduled the show at the last minute. Have only recently told people in my private network that it is that I am doing a show tonight. I suspect that was probably too late to attract much live participation. And if that is the case, I'll just finish it early and then maybe just delete the whole show. I wasn't going to do a show tonight, but the events of the day were just so extraordinary, this rush of coalition against Trump is really quite remarkable. So, and that drove the title of the show, that the knives are out for Trump at the palace. That was a phrase made popular back in the days of Princess Diana and Fergie, when the British establishment was going after Fergie. I think the radio feed is on. Let me see what they're saying.
Ohio Governor John Kasich so far has not been actually changing positions on foreign students staying in the U.S. for high. Is that an important change of face for Donald Trump?
You know, Donald Trump is constantly rewarded for authenticity, even when you would think political convention indicates otherwise. This might be one of those instances, but I will say the fact that the New York Times off-the-record immigration conversation has become such a big issue is highlighted by that change.
All right, the candidates making their way back to the podiums. We will take you there live and to our moderators, Brett Baer, Megyn Kelly, and Chris Wallace.
And the Republican presidential debate. Let's get right back to the questions.
Mr. Trump, one of the things people love about you is they believe you tell it like it is. But time and time again in this campaign, you have actually told the voters one thing, only to reverse yourself within weeks or even sometimes days. We've teed up just three examples in a videotape similar to those we used with Senator Rubio and Senator Cruz in the last debate. The first is on whether the war in Afghanistan was a mistake. Watch.
What about in Afghanistan? Do you believe that American boots should stay on the ground in Afghanistan to stabilize the situation?
We made a terrible mistake getting involved there in the first place. That thing will collapse about 2 seconds after they leave. Just as I said that Iraq was going to collapse after we leave. So,
about Afghanistan, you said we made a terrible mistake getting involved there in the first place.
We made a mistake going into Iraq. I've never said we made a mistake
going into
Afghanistan.
Our question was about Afghanistan. That day on our
trip. Okay, I never said that. Okay, wouldn't matter. I never said it.
Next, on whether we should accept...
Can I respond to that first?
Two more, and then you'll have the floor. Next, on whether we should accept the Syrian refugees.
You're going to be here a long time.
On whether we should accept the Syrian refugees.
Do you object to migrants who are getting out of the Middle East and North Africa? Do you object to them coming to the USA?
I hate the concept of it, but on a humanitarian basis with what's happening, you have to. It's living in hell in Syria. There's no question about it. They're living in hell.
Are you saying absolutely people from Syria, the Middle East, should we allow any of them into this country?
Look, from a humanitarian standpoint, I'd love to help, but we have our own problems. We have so many problems that we have to solve.
Most recently, on whether President George W. Bush lied to get us into the Iraq War.
They lied.
Okay.
They said there were weapons of mass destruction. There were none, and they knew there were none.
I don't know if he lied or not. He could have lied. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. I guess you'd have to ask him.
And there are many other examples. So how is any of this telling it like it?
Well, in Afghanistan, I did mean Iraq. I think you have to stay in Afghanistan for a while because of the fact that you're right next to Pakistan, which has nuclear weapons, and we have to protect that. Nuclear weapons change the game. And I was always against going into Iraq. In fact, I was always against it. There were some cases where I sort of, in one interview with a great friend of mine and yours, Howard Stern, said that I said very meekly, long before we went in, I said very meekly, well, maybe, I don't know. By the time it got to that point, I was always against Iraq. But Afghanistan, I felt, and in that one, if you notice, I corrected it the second day. Okay, second question?
There are several examples, Mr. Trump.
No,
we went through the Afghanistan being a mistake.
Right.
Within one day, you reversed yourself on Syria.
Let me explain that. You're right. Let me explain. First time the question had been put to me, it was very early on. The migration had just started, and I had heard that the number was a very, very small number. By the second day, two or three days later, I heard the number was going to be thousands and thousands of people. You know, when they originally heard about it, they were talking about bringing very, very small numbers in. And I said, begrudgingly, well, I guess maybe that's okay. It was not like, let's bring them in. Because I think we should build a safe zone. What we should be doing is building safe zones so they can stay in their own country and not go all over. And at least this way, we're not going to have the problem. That's what we have to do. But just to say, because I fully understand what you're asking, when I first heard the question, first time the question was ever asked to me, first time I really had known about the question, the migration had just started, I was very much like, okay. By the time I went back and studied it, and they were talking about bringing thousands and thousands, I changed my tune. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
But the point I'm going for is you change your tune on so many things, and that has some people saying, what is his core?
Megan, I have a very strong core. I have a very strong core. But I've never seen a successful person who wasn't flexible, who didn't have a certain degree of flexibility. You have to have a certain degree of flexibility. You can't, for instance, let's say on the second question, you can't say it's okay, and then you find out it's not okay, and you don't want to do anything. You have to be flexible because you learn. I mean, before I knew, you know, the question was asked by Bill, and the next day or a couple of days later, the question was asked I was asked by a number of people, actually. I was asked by Sean, but I was asked by a number of people. But by that time, the number had increased significantly.
Sean was the next day after Bill.
The next day. But I had learned. I mean, nobody had ever asked me the question. This was brand new. But I really mean it. You have to show a degree of flexibility. If you're going to be one way and you think it's wrong, does that mean the rest of your life you have to go in the wrong direction because you don't want to change?
I did 200 meetings in New Hampshire. I don't know how many in Michigan now. And in these town halls, people come in, and they're very emotional meetings. And you know what they really want to know? If somebody tells them something, can they believe it? And the reason why people are so upset in this country is because politicians all the time tell them what they want to hear, and they go to Washington or they go to the state capitol, wherever, and they don't deliver on those promises. You know, when I ran for governor of Ohio, I said not only would we balance the budget, but we would cut taxes. People said that can't be done. I wouldn't have said it if I didn't believe it. We cut taxes in Ohio more than any governor in the country, and $5 billion worth of tax cuts. We are now running a surplus in Ohio. But you see, what's getting in the hearts and souls of people is they want change, and they keep putting outsiders in to bring about the change. Then the change doesn't come. Then they put more outsiders in because we're putting people in that don't understand compromise, they don't understand policy. people are getting more and more frustrated with the system, which is why we must pick somebody that has a record of achievement, not just talk, not just talk, but a record of achievement. That's how we'll restore credibility.
There's a difference between flexibility and telling people whatever you think you need to say to get them to do what you want them to do.
Right.
And that's what Donald has done throughout his career.
Right.
Well, he did. That's why Trump University is so relevant here. I saw this video last week where he's sitting in front of a camera saying, we're going to hire the best people, and I'm going to handpick them, and they're going to be handpicked instructors, the best instructors in the world. One of them, by the way, was a manager at a Buffalo Wild Wing. And that's who they hired to do this. And people borrowed money, and they signed up for this fake university. And these people owe all of us money now, and they got nothing in return for it. But you were willing to say whatever you had to say to get them to give you their money.
Go ahead,
we're not going to
do that.
We'll
find out when we have this. By the way, just so you understand, this is a case I could have settled very easily, but I don't settle cases very easily when I'm right. 98% approval rating. We have an A from the Better Business Bureau. We have a 98% approval rating of people that took the course. We have an A from the Better Business Bureau, and people like it. Now, he's saying they didn't learn. We have many, many people that will be witnesses. Again, I don't settle cases. I don't do it because that's why I don't get sued very often, because I don't settle, unlike a lot of other people. We have a situation where we will win in court, but many of the people that are witnesses did tremendously well and made a lot of money by taking the course.
Go ahead, Senator.
But you're going to see.
It is right now an A. Once they had the information, it got switched. The only reason it was a D was because we didn't care. We didn't give them the information. When they got the information, it became an A.
With respect, we went back and looked at this.
Yes.
The rating from the Better Business Bureau was a D minus.
Right.
That's the last publicly available rating in 2010, and it was a result of the number of complaints they had.
But it was elevated to an A.
Let's just bring the viewers up to speed. And then you guys can have at it. There was Trump University, which was a business that you started, and it was marketed to many people, and now there is a class action of over 5,000 plaintiffs against you, Mr. Trump,
right.
And it involves veterans, and it involves teachers, and it involves so-called little guys, working class and lower working class and middle class, who say that they were fleeced, who say it was a scam. The class has been certified, and in that case, you countersued the lead plaintiff, alleging that you were being defamed. That case was thrown out against her.
The lead plaintiff is now getting out of the case because it's so bad for her.
But what happened was...
The lead plaintiff signed a letter saying how great it was and is on tape saying how great it was.
Okay, but what happened in that case was... You countersued her. The court threw out your countersuit and made you pay almost $800,000 in legal fees of hers. And you made the same argument about 98% of the people being happy with Trump University. And that woman in particular signing a survey saying she liked it while someone was standing
She's
over her shoulder. And this
She's
is what
trying
the,
to get out
and
of
this
the
is what the,
because her case
stand by.
Hold up.
This is what the Court of Appeals found. They said that the plaintiffs against you are like the Madoff victims.
Give me a proof.
They found that victims of con artists often sing the praises of their victimizers until they realize they have been fleeced.
You know what? Let's see what happens in court. This is a civil case. Very easy to have settled. Could settle it now. Very easy to have settled. This is a civil case. Let's see what happens at the end of a couple of years when this case is over. Okay?
It's been going for 5 years.
Been going for a long time.
Go ahead, Senator.
I spoke to one of the victims yesterday.
One of the victims.
There's several. Obviously, there's so many. I can't talk to them every day. I spoke to one of them yesterday. They told me exactly what happened. They signed up for this course because they believe Mr. Trump was this fantastic businessman, that Donald's going to teach them all the tricks of the trade. They signed up. They paid $15,000 for this course. They were asked for additional money for this course. If they really wanted the real secrets of success, they had to pay even more money, and so they did. And you know what they got in these courses? Stuff you can pull off of Zillow.
When they finally realized what a scam it was, they asked for their money back, and you refused to give them their money back.
I gave many people
tonight,
their money back.
Then why don't you tonight say you're going to give them the money back?
Let me just see.
Okay, Senator Rubio, let him answer.
Right, at the end of a few years.
Let him answer. Go ahead, Mr.
We will see who's right at the end of a few years. But all of the almost all of the people, many, many people, signed what's called the report card at the end. Did you like the course? How did you like it? Almost all of them said it was terrific, okay? With letters, with this. Some of them were on tape saying it was terrific. Let's see what happens at the end of 3 years.
With respect, Mr. Trump, one-third of the plaintiffs in that case demanded refunds, so it's not the case that 98% were
I gave some refunds to people, because if they asked for the refunds at a certain period of time, and we gave refunds to people.
Okay.
But let's see what happens at the end of 3 years.
Understood.
Megan, let's see who's right.
Still a pending litigation.
Here's why this is relevant.
It's called pending litigation.
Megan, this is why this is relevant to this.
All right, Senator Rubio, then Senator Cruz.
This is why, because he's trying to do to the American voter what he did to the people that signed up for this course. He's making promises. He has no intention of keeping it. And it won't just be $36,000 that they lose. It's our country that's at stake here. The future of the United States in the most important election in a generation, and he's trying to con people into giving them their vote, just like he conned these people into giving them their money.
Let me tell you, the real con artist, excuse me, the real con artist is Senator Marco Rubio, who was elected in Florida, and who has the worst voting record in the United States Senate. He doesn't go to vote. He's absent. He doesn't go. Now, the people of Florida can't stand him. He couldn't get elected dog catcher. The people of Florida, and by the way, I know he should have spent $25 million on ads. Without that, he wouldn't have a chance. He's 20 points down. The people in Florida wouldn't elect him dog catcher. He couldn't get any. He's right now 21 points down to me. And, you know, again, there'll be a lot of advertising. It's the only thing that might save him,
notice,
but I doubt it.
I'm coming to you next, but go ahead.
He scammed the people of Florida.
No apology.
He doesn't vote. He doesn't show up in the U.S. Senate. He doesn't vote. He scammed the people.
Understood.
He defrauded the people of Florida.
With respect, you've made that point. Go ahead.
There's no, as you can see in his answer, it's always the same thing.
You defrauded the people.
Challenged on a point.
Little Marco.
He defrauded people out of things, and not just, by the way, on the issue of Trump University. He had another development in Mexico that he had nothing to do with except his name on the building. People put money into that building.
Licensing.
They lost their money. Yeah, and a licensing, but you told them you own the building. So they gave him his money. They lost their money time and again.
Stand by.
He cheated people out.
I will come back to you. Senator Cruz wants to weigh in. You're coming back. Go ahead.
Megan, let me just ask the voters at home. Is this the debate you want playing out in the general election?
I won 10 states. If you listen to him, it's like, I won 10 states. person that didn't say that.
Okay.
Even the two people on your left and right said we did a great job. So how does he take five and say it's better than 10?
Go ahead.
I am by far the leader, but if you listen to a politician, he'll try and convince you otherwise.
Senator Cruz, go.
All right, well, Donald lives by the polls every day. He tweets by the polls. He's told us to look to the CNN poll. Well, that's a very good poll to look to, because that CNN poll showed that head-to-head, Donald Trump loses to Hillary Clinton by 8 points. He doesn't just lose close. He loses by 8 points. That same poll he told you to look at shows me beating Hillary Clinton. We cannot mess this up. And by the way, the last four polls in a row, when you nominate a candidate who literally has been on every side of every issue, and in the course of this debate, maybe on two other sides before we're done, that's not how you win, and the stakes are too high.
I'm going to let you respond to that, Mr. Trump. I'm going to go to you, Governor. You're up next.
Me beating Hillary Clinton, and very, very easily.
Okay. Do you want to weigh in?
All right, look, honestly, when I see people at these meetings, these town halls, where we take massive questions, and I get to spend last night, there was a woman that came to tell me about the loss of her 15-year-old son who took his own life. See, there's people in this country, and Ted's right, their wages haven't gone up for so long. They see the rich getting richer, they believe, and they're not moving, and they put their money in the bank, and they got no interest on their money. They receive none. And their sons or daughters are living in the basement because they can't get a good job after they rang up so much college debt. What people are hungry for is, who can fix this? People want to know, what can you do to solve the problems in Washington, to make sure that we have stronger job growth and better wages? But you know what else they're yearning for? They want to believe that they have the power to fix things where they live, and they want the power back so they can begin to do things in their community. Now, listen, this has been going on for a long time here, and I appreciate the discussion back and forth. But there are a lot of people out there yearning for somebody who's going to bring America back, both at the leadership level and in the neighborhood, where we can begin to reignite the spirit of the United States of America. And let's stop fighting.
Governor, thank you. Gentlemen, thank you.
Much more to come live from the Fox Theater, including where the candidates stand on the social issues facing the country. The Republican presidential debate continues in a moment.
Well, that was a very spirited exchange. I mean, the candidates have been just slugging at each other all night, and clearly the dynamic of this debate is between Rubio and Cruz have a sort of alliance of convenience going after Trump. And from a debating perspective, technical debating perspective, it seems to be pretty effective, although Trump has not lost his cool. Some of the responses probably leave a lot to be desired from a technical debating perspective. What the voters are going to think of it, that is another issue altogether, because people do not analyze debates the way they are analyzed in the opinion world or on the internet or whatever. Debating is a very visual medium, and a lot of the things that determine the outcome are symbolic messaging, not the analysis of debating points. So, I mean, we will see what we will see. Very interesting stuff going on tonight. Very interesting. I mean, we're seeing history being made, no doubt about it. And I think that strategically, Cruz will come out of this better than Rubio, because Rubio is doing the kind of pit bull part of it, and Cruz is doing the cleanup part of it. And I think Cruz will get the better of the voter reaction to that. But that's just my personal opinion. We will see what we will see. Very interesting stuff. I'm just looking at some of the comments on Twitter. It looks like the debaters are back, so we will see what we will see.
Charter schools. All of those things can come together to help, Megan. And here's the
bottom line, and I'll go quickly. We as adults have to fight in our neighborhoods, in our communities, for our children's education. Put the politics aside, and everyone in this room can play a role in lifting their schools and lifting the students who are in those schools, because too much politics gets in the middle of it, and where we focus as adults and put children first, we see tremendous results. And the people of this town are going to rise, and they need to be involved. Thank you.
For half a century, as you all know, Detroit was the symbol of America's industrial might. 300,000 manufacturing jobs in this city. At last count, there are now fewer than 30,000 manufacturing jobs here, and the unemployment rate in this city is 11%, twice the national average. Senator Cruz, I know that you have general plans for tax reform, but what specifically would you do to bring manufacturing jobs back to America and train residents of cities like Detroit to do those jobs?
Well, Chris, thank you for that question. Let me start by observing that Detroit is a great city with a magnificent legacy that has been utterly decimated by 60 years of failed left-wing policy. You know, Henry Ford revolutionized automobile manufacturing and brought automobiles to the middle class. During World War II, Detroit funded the arsenals of democracy to help us win World War II. In the 1960s, Detroit was the Silicon Valley of America. It had a population of 2 million people, had the highest per capita income in the country. And then for 50 years, left-wing Democrats have pursued destructive tax policies, weak crime policies, and have driven the citizens out. This city now has just 700,000 citizens. There are vacant homes, one after the other. Crime has been rampant, and it is an outrage. And let me say to folks in the media, that is a story that the media ought to be telling over and over again, the destruction of left-wing policies and the millions who have hurt because of it.
Well, I was going to say, I'll give you 30 seconds to try to answer my question. What specifically would you do to bring manufacturing jobs back to Detroit and to train the residents here to do those jobs?
The way you bring manufacturing back to America is, number one, you lift the regulations. As president, I will repeal Obamacare, the biggest job killer in America. I will pull back the federal regulators, the EPA, and all the regulators that are killing small businesses and manufacturing. And my tax plan, which is a very, very detailed plan on the website, tedcruz.org, is what's called border adjustable. We get rid of all the taxes. We get rid of the corporate income tax and the death tax and the Obamacare taxes and the payroll tax. And we replace it with a 16% business flat tax that is border adjustable, which means all exports are entirely tax-free and all imports pay the 16% business flat tax. That's a 32% differential. What that will do, Chris, is bring millions of manufacturing jobs back to this country, bring the steel industry back to this country, create an environment where when we compete on a fair and level playing field, American ingenuity can beat anyone. But right now, the federal government isn't giving us a level playing field.
Thank you, Senator.
Gentlemen, the next series of questions will be on social issues. Governor Kasich, the last debate, you were asked a question about religious liberty and a hypothetical situation where a same-sex couple approaches a cupcake maker to do their wedding. Here's what you said.
If you're in the business of selling things, if you're not going to sell to somebody you don't agree with, today I'm not going to sell to somebody who's gay, and tomorrow maybe I won't sell to somebody who's divorced.
Governor, some faith leaders got nervous about that answer. Do gay marriage dissenters have rights?
Well, look, first of all, I try to be a man of faith every day as best as I can. And I try to focus in my faith on the do's, and I think the don'ts will take care of themselves once I get the do's right, which is humility and loving my enemy and caring for my neighbor. But secondly, you're in the commerce business, you want to sell somebody a cupcake, great, okay? But now if they ask you to participate in something you really don't like, that's a whole nother issue, okay, another issue. Here's what I like to see happen. The Supreme Court ruled, I don't agree with the ruling. I'm in favor of marriage between, you know, traditional marriage, a man and a woman. What I hope was going to happen after the Supreme Court ruling is things would settle down. If you go to a photographer to take pictures at your wedding and he says, I'd rather not do it, find another photographer. Don't sue them in court. You know what? The problem is, in our country, we need to learn to respect each other and be a little bit more tolerant for one another. And at the end of the day, don't go to court. Can't we have common sense in America? That's the way it used to be. And there was a book written called The Death of Common Sense. We need to bring it back. But at the end of the day, if somebody is being pressured to participate in something that is against their deeply held religious beliefs, then we're going to have to think about dealing with the law. But you know what? I'd rather people figure this out without having to put another law in the books and have more arguments in this country. Why don't we come together as a country, respect one another, love one another, and lift this country? I think that's what people want. So,
Senator Cruz, the U.S. Supreme Court obviously declared same-sex marriage legal in all 50 states, a decision you have criticized. Given the current status of the law, do you believe a gay couple should be able to adopt?
Well, listen, adoption is decided at the state level, and I am a believer in the 10th Amendment and the Constitution. I would leave the question of marriage to the states. I would leave the question of adoption to the states. That's the way it's been for two centuries of our nation's history until five unelected judges in an illegitimate and wrong decision decided to seize the authority over marriage and wrongfully tear down the marriage laws of all 50 states. Now, integrally connected to this is the question of religious liberty, and at the last debate, one of my colleagues on this stage said on the question of religious liberty and Supreme Court nominees that he'd be willing to compromise and negotiate. I can tell you, for me, there are areas that we should compromise on. Marginal tax rates, we can reach a middle ground on. But when it comes to core principles and convictions, when it comes to the Constitution and Bill of Rights, I can tell the men and women at home, I will never compromise away your religious liberty. And for me, Brett, religious liberty has been a lifelong passion. I've spent two decades defending religious liberty, including defending the Ten Commandments before the U.S. Supreme Court and winning, defending the Pledge of Allegiance before the Supreme Court and winning, and defending the Mojave Desert Veterans Memorial, a lone white Latin cross that was erected to honor the men and women who gave their lives in World War I. I represented 3 million veterans for free defending that memorial, and we won 5-4 before the Supreme
Court. Thank you. Senator Cruz definitely avoided saying your name, Mr. Trump, but I think he was referring to you in your religious liberty answer. Would you like to respond?
I have nothing to say. I mean, I generally speaking agree with what he said. I would have certainly have rather left it to the states. I was always in favor. I was very surprised when they came up with that decision. I would have preferred had it been left to the states, and I think most people would have preferred that.
Senator Rubio, the late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, a conservative icon, obviously pointed out in United States versus Heller that, like most rights, the Second Amendment right is not unlimited. Just like the First Amendment doesn't allow you to go into a theater and yell fire, he said the Second Amendment leaves room to regulate guns. So do you agree with Justice Scalia? And if so, what limits would you draw around the Second Amendment?
As few as possible. The Second Amendment, as I've said before, is not a suggestion. It is the constitutional right of every American to protect themselves and their families. It is a right that it is the Second Amendment for a reason. It is right after the defense of the freedom of speech for a reason. For clearly the founders of our nation understood, and the framers of the Constitution understood, that you cannot have life and you cannot have liberty and you cannot pursue happiness if you are not safe. And the Second Amendment, when people talk about gun laws, what they need to realize is criminals don't follow gun laws. They're criminals. By definition, they ignore the law. But the gun rights of Americans, if you are talking to a law-abiding citizen and a gun owner like myself, if you pass a law, I will follow whatever the law is. A criminal will not do it. They will continue to pursue these guns on the black market, where they then go out and commit crimes and they steal guns from each other. Gun laws are not effective. They simply do not provide for safety, but they do, however, ensure that law-abiding people don't have access to weapons to protect themselves and guns to protect themselves. But criminals will always be well-armed. They don't care about the law. They don't follow the law. We will protect the Second Amendment when I'm president of the United States.
Mr. Trump, you were once a supporter of an assault weapons ban. So do you think there should be any restrictions on the Second Amendment?
I'm a big defender of the Second Amendment. And if you look at what's happened, whether it's in California where you had the 14 people killed, whether it's in Paris, which, by the way, has the toughest gun laws in the world, and 130 people killed, many, many people in the hospital, gravely injured, they will be dying. Many people will be dying in addition. If we had guns or if they had guns on the other side of the room, with the bullets going in the opposite direction, you would not have had 130 people killed. That I can tell you right now. So I'm a very, very big supporter of the Second Amendment.
But in 2000, you wrote in your book, I generally oppose gun control, but I support the ban on assault weapons.
I don't support it anymore. I do not support the ban on assault.
Senator Cruz, any limits to the Second Amendment?
Well, listen, unlike Donald, I would not support banning firearms. In that instance, Bill Clinton banned many of the most popular firearms in America. And by the way, the study showed that ban did nothing to reduce violent crime. It just took away the Second Amendment rights of law-abiding citizens. And let me point out, you know, it is easy for political candidates to have rhetoric and say, I support the Second Amendment. But you cannot say that and at the same time say what Donald just said, which is that on the question of Supreme Court nominees, he wants to compromise and reach a middle ground with Harry Reid and Chuck Schumer. That's what he said in the last debate.
I did not say that.
And I would point out Harry Reid and Chuck Schumer are both Democrats that Mr. Trump has written checks to repeatedly. Any justice that those two sign off on is going to be a left-wing judicial activist who will undermine religious liberty, and we are one vote away from the Hillary decision being overturned, which would effectively erase the Second Amendment from the Bill of Rights. If you care about the Second Amendment, then you need to ask, who on this stage do you know will appoint principled constitutionalists to the court and not cut a deal with your Second Amendment
rights? Mr. Trump, so we're listening to the All Talk, No Action politics, and he was the primary supporter of John Roberts, who gave us Obamacare. No, it's not. You take a look. He was the primary supporter. He pushed John Roberts and pushed him and pushed him, and Bush ultimately appointed him. He got appointed, and when it came his time to raise his hand and kill Obamacare, not once but twice, he let us down, and he did the wrong thing. This is the man that was the primary supporter. And you can read Law Journal, you can read whatever you want to read. I've read plenty of it. There was no stronger supporter of John Roberts than him, and it was a very, very big mistake.
Quickly, Senator Cruz.
You know, Donald has a tenuous relationship with the truth. I wrote one op-ed supporting President Bush's nomination after he made it. I would not have made that nomination. But let me point out,
just going at it tonight. Rubio trying to get in witty digs without much policy in there. Rubio is a very quick reciter of talking points. And those are good talking points. He's articulate at making them, but they are talking points. Donald is doing his shtick, as he customarily does, and Ted is doing the lawyer stuff, which sounds good, but doesn't really get to the things that are probably bothering the people. So I think that the viewer is going to be walking away from all of three candidates tonight maybe somewhat less than impressed. I think John Kasich is probably answering the questions the best in terms of substance, but of course, I just don't think the dynamic of the race is such that he can take anything but Ohio. So it's a very interesting thing. Will the anti-Trump coalition prevail, powered by things like this debate and what is clearly the anti-Trump a bias of Fox in this debate? Or will people be, side with Donald Trump, the populist approach prevailing, despite the fact that these two young senators are ganging up on him? Or will people just be alienated by the whole thing? It's a very interesting question. And who knows? Who knows? As far as the show tonight, like I said, I scheduled it very late. I didn't publicize it. I don't even think most of the people in my private network know it's on. I would imagine we're going to get to the end of the debate pretty soon now. And unless I see people calling in or dropping into chat, I'm going to end it soon after the debate comes to an end. And now I'm going to go back to the live feed.
Megyn Kelly and Chris Wallace.
Welcome back, everybody. We want to get right back to the question.
And gentlemen, we're going to focus for a bit now on foreign policy. Senator Rubio, you like to take a shot at Mr. Trump on the campaign trail, saying that negotiating a hotel deal in a foreign country is not foreign policy. The other day, you even compared him to Kim Jong-un, the North Korean leader, as lunatics trying to get a hold of nuclear weapons. Please tell Mr. Trump why he's unprepared to be commander-in-chief.
Well, first of all, I think as we've seen throughout this campaign, Donald has not shown a seriousness about the issues of foreign policy. He just simply hasn't. Whether it was the structure of our military, even today he was asked the question about the issue of commanders not following his lead on killing the family of terrorists. And his answer basically was, if I tell them to do it, they're going to do it. And that's just not true. Foreign policy is not only consequential, I think much of our future now depends on it. You know, I see a lot of young people at my events around the country. I feel great when they come. And I always tell them that despite the hardships of the moment, I honestly believe that today's millennials have a chance to be the greatest generation we've had in 100 years. I really do. Because the world today has hundreds of millions of people that can afford to be their clients, their customers, their partners, people they collaborate with. But that won't happen if the world is dangerous and it's unstable. And that will require strong American leadership. The next president of the United States is going to have 8 years of a mess of a foreign policy to clean up. That's why it can't be Hillary Clinton. And quite frankly, that's why it can't be someone who simply has not shown the intellectual curiosity or the interest in learning about these very complicated issues. And Donald simply hasn't.
Trump, your response.
Well, let me just say this. I've gotten to know Marco over a period of time. Believe me, he is not a leader. Believe me. And,
but that doesn't answer the question.
Is not a leader. And frankly, when I say they'll do as I tell them, they'll do as I tell them. And that's very simple. We are in a very dangerous place. We have a depleted military, totally depleted. We have, by the way, our vets are treated horribly. We're going to take care of our vets. We're going to start taking care of our vets properly, like we should. But we're going to build up our military, and we're going to get the equipment we want, not the equipment that's sold to us by somebody that gave him and not the governor campaign contributions, okay? We're going to get the equipment that the generals and the soldiers want. I will prove to be a great leader. And And, you know, it's very interesting. We talk about the polls. Every single poll, when it comes to ISIS and the military and the border, say by far Trump is the best.
Mr. Trump, your time is up.
Yeah, I just want a couple points. Once again, he was pressed on a policy issue to show his understanding of the foreign policy, and his reaction was just to attack somebody else with a name. Here's the bottom line, and I'm going to repeat it again. The world today is as complicated and as complex as it has been, certainly in the lifetime of anybody here today. You indeed do have a lunatic in North Korea with nuclear weapons. You indeed do have the Chinese government taking over the most important shipping lane in the world. And Vladimir Putin, who you've expressed admiration for.
Wrong.
Well, you've expressed admiration.
Wrong.
Someone you said
is
a strong leader.
Wrong.
Is now
he
dividing
said very
Europe
good things about
and,
me, and I said
right,
that one.
I'm going to finish my statement here.
Yeah,
and he's also sowing instability in the Middle East. You have Iran is going to get $100 billion of sanctions relief. You have radical jihadists spreading all over the world. This is a time for seriousness on these issues. You have yet to answer a single serious question about any of this. Will you give us a detailed answer about foreign policy anytime you're asked on it?
Let me just tell you, first of all, I've been hearing this man so long talking about Putin. Putin said about me. I didn't say about Putin. Putin said very nice things about me. And I say very nicely, wouldn't it be nice if actually we could get along with Russia, we could get along with foreign countries, instead of spending trillions and trillions of dollars. You're talking about Flint, Michigan. You're talking about places we need to rebuild the infrastructure of our country. Wouldn't it be nice if we got along with the world and maybe Russia could help us in our quest to get rid of ISIS, et cetera, et cetera?
Gentlemen, you both have had a chance to talk a couple of times. I'd like to move on to Senator Cruz. Senator, we have some breaking news tonight. North Korea's dictator, Kim Jong-un, has ordered that country's nuclear weapons to be made ready at a moment's notice.
Yes.
And this comes just hours after the UN Security Council approved the toughest sanctions in two decades against that country. Assume you're President Cruz tonight. What do you do?
Well, you're right. The news is very disturbing that Kim Jong-un has put their nuclear weapons on ready state. I'm glad that we're sending another carrier group to the South China Sea. I'm glad that Congress passed sanctions on North Korea. But this is all the result of the failures of the Clinton administration two decades ago that negotiated a deal with North Korea, lifting the sanctions, allowing billions of dollars to flow in, and they used that money to develop nuclear weapons in the first place. Now we're in a much harder position. When you have a lunatic with nuclear weapons, to some extent it constrains your options. We need to be moving the carrier group to the South China Seas. We need to be putting in place missile defense, such as the THAAD missile defense system in South Korea. We need to be pursuing space-based missile defense. One of the advantages of space-based missile defense is that if you have a missile launch in North Korea or you have a missile launch in Iran, a space-based missile defense can take out one or two or three missiles before it can cross over and do damage. And we also need to be putting pressure on China because North Korea is effectively a client state of China. All of that will happen with a strong commander-in-chief that is devoted to keeping this country safe.
Thank you, Senator. Governor Kasich, I want to move back to the debate that we heard earlier about Vladimir Putin in December. After Vladimir Putin had some nice things to say about Donald Trump, calling him bright and talented, your campaign ran a video suggesting that Trump might name the Russian president as his running mate. Here's a clip.
I have to see this.
If elected, Trump promised that the dictatorial duo would, quote, make tyranny great again.
I think I'd get along very well with Vladimir Putin. I just think so.
Was your campaign video, sir?
That was a pretty good one.
Well, okay. Sir, if I may ask my question, I think you were kidding.
Yeah.
But it was your video. And the serious question is, because the suggestion is, do you think that Donald Trump is naive about the threat that Vladimir Putin represents?
I'm not biting. Let me just take you around the world, okay? In Russia, we need to tell them we're going to arm the Ukrainians with defensive lethal weapons. And we're going to tell Putin, if you attack anybody in Eastern Europe in NATO, you attack Finland and Sweden, which is not in NATO, consider it an attack on us. And he will understand that. Secondly, I would tell the Chinese, you don't own the South China Sea. Stop hacking us. and we're going to beef up our cyber command, and we're going to be in a position to be able to take out your systems if you continue to do this. Now, let's move over into the Middle East. The Egyptians, they know they're on their last legs there because of the attack from ISIS. The Jordanians have been our friends. They know that they're at risk. So do the Saudis. So do the Gulf states. They are our allies, really, or have similar aims. We need to bring them closer to us. Turkey, a critical avenue to the Middle East. We have to bring them towards the West and not towards the East. And we have to be joint and have good human intelligence. That's sort of a semi-trip around the world. And if you gave me more time, I'd finish the trip.
Governor, thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, a final question and closing statement. And take a look at this. The volume of conversation on Facebook surrounding the remaining candidates over the last month, whether that conversation is good or bad, Donald Trump clearly dominates the field. We'll be back with more of the Republican presidential debate live from Detroit.
And here's my impression of a reality TV star explaining progressive discounts. So I was talking to Greg, and he said that they already knew what Erica said about her when we were all on Marcus's boat. And I was like, you what? Wait for a sincere drama because Progressive chose discounts like Safe Driver, Multi-Policy, and Paid in Full. So it's not like he said, she said, shut up, whatever. So basic, you know?
Discounts to help you save more. Now that's progressive.
But then he was all, no way, Jose, because his name's Jose. Legit.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Did you file your taxes with someone other than Block last year? If so, your day's about to get made. We'll do your taxes for half what you paid them. That's 50% less. Half. And half price is a better price. So what are you waiting for? Switch to Block and pay half. Offer ends March 31st. Make an appointment at hrblock.com. It's refund season. Come get your money.
Subject to $100 minimum charge. Last year's receipt required. Not everyone gets a refund at participating locations. For details, visit hrblock.com.
This is the sound of a University of Phoenix student earning a business degree. What you don't hear is the University of Phoenix student studying in between shifts in his two-bedroom apartment while his children sleep. What you don't hear is this student defying the odds to succeed. Shouldn't that student be the candidate you take a longer look at? University of Phoenix. We rise. Learn more at phoenix.edu. Carpets stand up to wine, chocolate, and even bleach. Life-proof carpet from the Home Depot can. Its stain-resistant technology is built in to help keep tough stains out. Right now, get 10% off or up to 24-month financing on any flooring purchase, including Life-proof, the next generation of carpet. The Home Depot. More saving. More doing. Filed through March 16th, U.S. only. Subject to credit approval. Terms and conditions apply.
Republican nominee, and let me tell you why. Because the Democrats have two people left in the race.
One of them is a socialist. America doesn't want to be a socialist country. If you want to be a socialist country, then move to a socialist country. The other one is under FBI investigation. And not only is she under FBI investigation, she lied to the families of the victims of Benghazi. And anyone who lies to the families of victims who lost their lives in the service of our country can never be the commander-in-chief of the United States. Senator, we must defeat Hillary Clinton.
Senator Cruz, yes or no, you will support Donald Trump if he's the nominee?
Yes, because I gave my word that I would. And then what I have endeavored to do every day in the Senate is do what I said I would do. You know, just on Tuesday, we saw an overwhelming victory in the state of Texas, where I won Texas by 17%. And I will say it was a powerful affirmation that the people who know me best, the people who I campaigned to, made promises that if you elect me, I'll lead the fight against Obamacare, I'll lead the fight against amnesty, I'll lead the fight against our debt, and I will fight for the Bill of Rights and your rights every day, that the people of Texas said, you have kept your word, and that's what I'll do as president.
Governor Kasich, yes or no, would you support Donald Trump as the Republican nominee?
Yeah, I kind of think that before it's all said and done, I'll be the nominee. But let me also say, remember,
but your answer is
I'm
yes.
The little engine that can, and yeah, look, when you're in the arena, and we're in the arena, and the people out here watch, we're in the arena, we're traveling, we're working, we spend time away from our family. When you're in the arena, you enter a special circle, and you want to respect the people that you're in the arena with. So if he ends up as the nominee, sometimes he makes it a little bit hard, but, you know, I will support whoever is the Republican nominee for president.
Mr. Trump, I'm going to ask you a version of the same question as we saw today with Mitt Romney. The Never Trump movement is gaining steam. Some people are talking about contributing millions of dollars to try to stop you. Again today, you raised the possibility that you might run as an independent if you feel you're treated unfairly by the Republican Party. So I'm going to phrase the question that the other three people in the state just got. Can you definitively say tonight that you will definitely support the Republican nominee for president, even if it's not you?
Even if it's not me? Let me just start off by saying something.
30 seconds, sir.
Okay. That I'm very, very proud of. Millions and millions of people have come to the Republican Party over the last little while. They've come to the Republican Party, and by the way, the Democrats are losing people. This is a trend that's taken place. It's the biggest thing happening in politics, and I'm very proud to be a part of it. And I'm going to give them some credit, too, even though they don't deserve it. But the answer is, yes, I will.
Yes, you will support the nominee of the party.
Yes, I will.
I love being here in Michigan, and I want to say to all of you here that I have a record of being able to solve some of the biggest problems. It's not just talk, and it's not theory. I did it in Washington by helping people get into a healthier economic situation. I've done it in Ohio, and as we've made progress in Ohio, we've left no one behind. We've not left behind the mentally ill, the drug addicted, the working poor, the developmentally disabled, and we have raised our minority community. And as President of the United States, I will go back to Washington. I will take the formulas that I used, and I will fix the problems in Washington, and you'll work with me as I send you power to fix your communities, your neighborhoods, your state, and together we'll restore the spirit of America, and I know you want that. Thank you.
Senator Rubio, 30-second closing statement.
I know this has been an unusual election cycle as it continues, and there's a lot of problems in America, and people are truly hurting. But this election is not just about confronting our problems. It's also about embracing our opportunities. I believe the 21st century holds the potential to be the greatest era in the history of the United States if we get this election right and if we act now. If we do what needs to be done, we can leave our children as the freest and most prosperous Americans that have ever lived. And the 21st century can be the greatest era in the amazing story of America. So I ask everyone to vote for me and join our effort at MarcoRubio.com.
Senator Cruz, your closing statement.
I want to talk to every soldier and sailor and airman and marine. I want to talk to every mom and dad and sister and brother and son and daughter of someone fighting for this country. For 7 years, you've had a commander-in-chief that doesn't believe in you, that sends you into combat with rules of engagement that tie your arms behind your back. That is wrong, it is immoral, and in January 2017, it will end. I want to also talk to all the police officers and firefighters and first responders who have been left behind with this president starting in January 2017.
am going to bring jobs back to the United States like nobody else can. We're going to fix our very depleted military. We're going to take care of our vets. We're going to strengthen our borders. And you're going to be very, very proud of this country in just a few years if I'm elected president. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And that'll do it for the 11th Republican primary debate of the 2016 presidential race. But the night is not over yet.
Not by a long shot. A special edition of the O'Reilly Factor is next. And remember, Fox News has the race for the White House covered all the way to the conventions and on to the general election.
Thank you again for joining us. Have a great evening.
All right. Well, that was a very interesting debate. Very lively. Going to get a lot of play tomorrow. A lot of interesting sound bites in that debate. Nothing all that much substantive. Basically the strategy was the same. Cruz and Rubio double teaming against Trump. Rubio doing the more of the personal digs. Cruz doing more of a critique on substance. And with Kasich, his strategy is to float above it all, and Donald not being very specific about either policy or the critiques of him launched by the others, but talking more in general terms about his leadership skill, his business record, his vision of the country, etc. So really not that much new. People have to make their own decision as to what they think is going to work for the country. So I don't know. Like I said, there is I scheduled late. I don't know if we'll have any participation. I'm going to take a little break. When I come back, we'll see what's going on in the chat and on the switchboard. And I might play a little more of the Fox feed. Other than that, I'll call it an evening. So let's play some. A little mood music, and I will be back in a couple of minutes. Thank you. Okay, let's see what's going on in Switchboard and chat. I think it's going to be kind of a lost cause as far as attracting viewers, given the fact that I gave no publicity about the show until an hour before it started. So I think I will just briefly drop in on Fox.
He hit my hands. Nobody has ever hit my hands. I've never heard of this one. Look at those hands.
Well, there was some innuendo, I think, involved in that, Tony. Have you ever heard anything like this? And not just this debate, because this has been going on for a couple of weeks.
You know, no one thought Donald Trump could shock us anymore. And tonight he, I think, had the pièce de résistance, as they would say. Look, you see on Twitter, Frank Luntz's focus group used the word embarrassing the most to describe tonight's debate, which is unfortunate because as much as the tone was sometimes sophomoric, sometimes ridiculously immature, there was a lot of substance discussed. This was one of those debates, the clearer field, the smaller crowd, where you were able to get a real understanding of the various candidates' positions. And I will tell you, leaving tonight, you're going to see a lot more conversation about immigration reform, Donald Trump changing his position, the New York Times off-the-record conversation. I think tonight just reignited a major conversation around immigration.
And I think that's a big part of this as well, because we heard in this immigration debate something that I think took a few people aback when Donald Trump switched a position. Now, he claims that he has done this over time, that what's on his website currently is wrong. He has changed since then. But this is a serious issue for Donald Trump when you think about the immigration issue. In this case, it's an issue over visas and how long foreign students can stay in the United States.
Well, that's the Fox radio feed. I was hoping that they might cut into Fox television, but they're not. So I think I'm going to call it a night. Very interesting debate in a subsequent show with all the other developments that happened today, especially Mitt Romney basically joining forces with the Never Trump crowd, although he, all that he's doing is to create an alliance against Trump, which is, it's politics. I mean, he has a right to do it. You know, where I tend to draw the line is if they don't support the eventual nominee. And tonight, all four of the remaining candidates did say that they would support the eventual nominee of the Republican Party. So now it's up to the Republican voters to make their decision. I think that a lot has been revealed, not only by the candidates tonight, but also by the respective camps of the candidates and the degree that they and the extent to which they are willing to go to undermine both the candidates, rival candidates, and the supporters of rival candidates. A lot of personal insults have been tossed in the past few weeks, not only at the candidates, which is normal, but at their supporters, which is kind of normal for politics. But normally it occurs between parties, not within a party. Well, the factionalism within the parties is very intense right now, and I think that we are also seeing some very interesting class snobbery attitudes surfacing, especially directed against Trump's lower-income supporters, and I think that is going to have some repercussions in the general election if Trump is not the nominee. But we will see what we will see, because right now the focus within the Republican Party is, of course, on the primary contest, and people are really not focusing on the alternative to whoever the Republican nominee is, and that, of course, is the very left-leaning Hillary Clinton, or even the very, very, very left-leaning Bernie Sanders, or if Hillary, in some workout of the legal situation, does get indicted, then it's very possible the Democrats will have a brokered convention where I think President Obama and his team will have a very decisive role in picking the eventual Democratic nominee. We live in interesting times. So on that note, I'm going to close the show. It will be left in archive if people want to listen to the last hour of the debate. And hope you all have a very good weekend, and we'll be back in a few days with more coverage of what looks like to be a very interesting campaign. Have a great evening.